Bitcoin is a new paradigm, just like the internet was. And just like there was no way around email addresses and URLs, there is currently no way around Bitcoin addresses, private keys, and you guessed it, XPubs. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What's up, guys? A little late on the episode today. I'm Guy Swan. This is Bitcoin Audible. And this will be the second time I'm recording this episode. hopefully it sticks. This round, something really bizarre is going on with the software. So I've switched computers and set up, and I will record this again. If there is any audio issue with the final product that I don't catch, I apologize, but I'm trying to get it fixed. So what are we reading today? We have a really, really good one from the Swan Bitcoin blog. And hat tip, if you are if you want those $10 free sats and you are not stacking with Swan Bitcoin, you got to do so immediately at swanbitcoin.com/guy. But that has nothing to do with what we are reading today, which is by Dergigi, many-time author on this show and author of the amazing 21 Lessons series and now book. And there's been kind of a big bit of a Twitter drama and a lot of discussions again about Bitcoin having a really bad user experience. And I think he does a really good job of addressing this. And it's something that I want to dive into afterward. Now, a quick shout out to for making this worth doing all over again, Hexa Wallet, our sponsor for the show. And the feature I want to talk about, just because I still think this is the coolest thing ever, and I've never seen this in a mobile wallet before, is the built-in super easy transaction batching. You just select a bunch of your contacts, how much you want to send to each one. Like just with a little check, like click, 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 click. These are all the ones, and I can do my savings account as well, and maybe like a Lightning wallet or something. And then I just hit send, and it writes one transaction and saves on fees. That is that. Talking about user experience, this is going to come back again later in the episode because that's awesome. And these are the sorts of developments that I think are actually major improvements to abstracting away a lot of these tools. But there is a ton more to dig into, and I won't lead Gigi too much here. But again, though, the sponsor was Hexa Wallet. You can check them out on any of the app stores or hexawallet.io. But let's go ahead and get into today's article about the Bitcoin user experience. Again, by Gigi on the Swan Bitcoin blog, and it's titled "On Bitcoin's User Experience." There is an ongoing discussion in the Bitcoin space revolving around the topic of user experience, or UX for short. Bitcoin still feels weird, clunky, and complicated at times. The main reason for this is that Bitcoin and its parts, the network, the protocol, the cryptography, the scripting language, are indeed weird, clunky, and complicated, just like the internet was, and arguably still is. The reason why the internet doesn't feel as clumsy anymore is twofold. One, people got used to a lot of the novel concepts that the internet brought with it. And two, countless layers of abstraction make interacting with the base protocol easier. Related technologies, such as plug and play, helped to make the user experience even better. Gone are the days of manually setting the IRQ number of your network card. Just like the internet, Bitcoin is an evolving ecosystem. Keep in mind that a lot of things have already changed for the better. For example, the first wallet that supported QR codes was released in 2012. XPubs were proposed in the same year. Seed phrases were proposed in 2013. BIP44, HD wallets, or aka accounts, came in 2014. SegWit, VIP 141, was proposed in 2015, and after a prolonged civil war, activated in 2017. Today, most people take QR codes and seed phrases for granted, not realizing that these weren't always part of Bitcoin. I'm sure that some take the Lightning Network, made possible thanks to SegWit, for granted as well. My point is, all of these under-the-hood technical improvements are insanely important for user experience. Without them, interacting with the Bitcoin network would still be hell. Seed phrases, easy wallet recovery, the Lightning Network, forget it. Yet all these improvements are insanely technical and require technical discussion. More improvements are coming down the pipeline, Schnorr, Taproot, and more, so expect discussions in the Bitcoin space to remain technical for quite some time to come. Think Linux, not iPhone. Speaking of iPhones, the tension seems to be between tinkerers and users coddled by iPhones and co., expecting everything to work perfectly and be super duper easy to understand right now. Well, it isn't. Just like one had to know what an IP address is and how packet switching works in the early days of the internet, you kinda need to know what an XPub is today. DHCP basically got rid of the IP addresses problem, just like Google did away with the typing in exact URLs problem. All of that will be true for Bitcoin as well. It just won't happen overnight. The base protocol will probably slowly ossify over time, just like the Windows TCP/IP setup dialog ossified over time. Once the base layer is sufficiently optimized, most innovation will happen on higher layers. I believe some people closer to the engineering side are simply tired of the "it's so complicated, it should be easier" line. Yes, we agree. All of it should be easier, and we are all doing our best trying to make it so. Some are building products that are easy to use. Strike, Casa, CoinKite, Samurai, etc. Others are working on protocol improvements so that everything will be easier and better in the future. Thank you, core devs. Others are working on the wider ecosystem. Raspi Blitz, BTC Pay Server, Umbral, etc. And others on education and outreach so that more people can get on board and help to make Bitcoin better. Over time, people will get used to the concepts that we can't abstract away. I'm convinced that things will get easier, just like connecting to a network is easier than it was in 1995. Bitcoin is a new paradigm, just like the internet was. Just like there was no way around email addresses. What's this strange at sign? And URLs. What's HTTP, HTTPS, FTP, SSH? There is currently no way around Bitcoin addresses, private keys, and you guessed it, XPubs. Some concepts are essential. Removing them because you want a better UX might turn out to be fatal. Remove packet switching, net neutrality from the internet, and you destroy what made the internet great in the first place. Remove self-custody, or account creation via mathematics or neutrality or a multitude of other things, from Bitcoin, and you destroy what makes Bitcoin great in the first place. It goes without saying that self-custody will always be worse in UX terms when compared to letting someone else take care of things. Similarly, setting up your own domain and hosting your own website will always be more hassle than creating a Facebook page. It's a matter of trade-offs. Always. Focusing purely on maximizing user experience might lead to suboptimal results in the long run. Just compare Facebook, TikTok, and the walled garden of iOS to permissionless open protocols and the Floss ecosystem. Personally, I will always choose freedom over convenience. The future is bright. We just have a lot of building to do. GG. And that closes On Bitcoin's UX from the Swan Bitcoin blog. Now, I want to talk a little bit, at least, about kind of the user experience in Bitcoin kind of my history through it, because what's funny is a lot of the things that he brings up in this article, like I was actually there when they landed. So it's kind of funny to see, you know, looking back on some of these things, it is really easy to see how so much of this stuff has been taken for granted. And I think we're being incredibly impatient and failing to see how far we have come in such a short span of time. I genuinely think the user experience is getting better in Bitcoin at damn near twice the rate that the internet actually got usable. In fact, really, if you look at it from a super normie, like not someone who grew up in it, like the boomer generation and like the grandparents of like our generation, like really it's only since the mobile wave, it's only since we went full touchscreen and migrated from desktop computers to mobile computing, iPads, iPhones, tablets, multi-touch, and all of this stuff, that it really kind of crossed that last barrier. Like, you could argue that the UX for the internet has sucked for the vast majority of its history, and even now, it's not wonderful. Like, there are a lot of headaches still with using a lot of, you know, just internet tooling. Like, I'm constant, like, people still call me, and, like, I'm still sorting out little issues and stuff on the internet, and trying to walk some of the older generations just even through these interfaces that seem easy. And, you know, it's like, obviously, you just hit on settings or whatever. Like, there's still a huge literacy problem just in looking at an app and seeing what can be navigated. Like, I was, you know, I've walked through a lot of people in the older generation, my dad, my, you know, parents and family and friends and stuff, on things like the Cash app and stuff, trying to get on Bitcoin and Swan Bitcoin. And, you know, if you don't grow up with these things, if you don't, like, literally use these things constantly, it's amazing how simple what something that seems so intuitive and like on the nose, like obviously it would be this, might just be invisible to somebody else with a different perspective. Like, there is no, like, the problem with user experience is that not every customer is the same. Not every person sees or recognizes the same things. And the levels of literacy in computers and technology and stuff is a huge spectrum, just a massive spectrum. But I'll direct people to, I highly recommend you actually go look at this article, because he's got some really great images. Gigi put some really great images in this one with like old stuff with the internet, like actually setting up your IRQ number for your network card, what Git looked like in 1998, that standard, what are your TCP/IP settings, that you know, that was really kind of, I guess it was late 90s, early 2000s that finally got like submitted, just in like the settings, like what you saw when you went to your IP settings, your internet network settings. And he's also got a picture at the bottom of how, like, you know, sharing your Wi-Fi on Android or Apple. You know, you've got this where you can either have somebody scan, or you can literally just share it like with somebody in your contact so that they can connect to your Wi-Fi without having to give somebody your password. That's not old. That's like really, really recent that became the norm. But things are actually being abstracted away in Bitcoin at an incredible pace. You know, Bitcoin is still extremely young. This is a network protocol and a technology, a networked technology that money is not something that just springs up overnight. You know, this is a huge technological shift, very, very similar to the internet. This is an infrastructure for all of finance. That is not something that can, you don't really want to rush a shift like that or a protocol like that. And 10 years is nothing in the grand scheme of things. We're 30 years plus into the internet as we know it, and still sorting out some pretty basic things like connecting to Wi-Fi. And I remember Bitcoin before we had these things, before what it was today. Like I was scared generally to even recommend it to somebody, or to, like, if anybody ever did show interest and they were like, okay, well, how do I like have a wallet? I would just get nervous. I would be like, oh God, I'm sorry that I just told you how great this thing was, because I'm just worried that you're going to put money in it and lose it. Like, it's just going to be deleted or lost, or you're going to download malware. Like, I thought it was a really dangerous environment. Like, I thought it was amazing technology and fascinating from an Austrian economics, like, money point of view. But if somebody wasn't, like, really techie, I was scared to tell them to go buy some or to go have some. It's specifically because of services like Cash App and Swan Bitcoin and all of these, like, ones that River Financial and these ones that are popping up, and Coinbase too. Coinbase was a big thing back in the day, even though I really kind of despise them now. But they were huge back in the day for having a place that I could trust for someone to actually hold Bitcoin. Obviously, we've got a whole lot better alternatives now, so now they're garbage in retrospect. But looking forward from what we had come from to when Coinbase existed, it was a huge development. They were a not super unbelievably shady exchange that actually had some sensible, like, they looked responsible and they looked like they were trying to be a real business. That was once a very rare luxury in Bitcoin. And seed phrases, before seed phrases were even a thing in 2013, you had to save your whole, you had to go into your program app, your application folders, and dig down into this thing and find a wallet.dat file. And I remember HD wallets when HD is hierarchically deterministic. And he says in this quote unquote accounts, and what it basically means is there's a path to deriving a whole bunch of addresses. And that's where, if you've ever seen the path, the derivation path, in like BTC Pay Server or you know, some other wallet that asks you to put it in, that's how you are, essentially, it's the instructions to generate a specific subset of addresses based on your key. Because basically, you have an unlimited number of addresses that you can create, right? Like, you could just hash indefinitely. Well, in that same vein is that you can actually have the private keys, but at one point, if you didn't have the list of addresses that were yours, well, then you were screwed. You didn't, like, that's why you had to save this whole file. Back in the day, I would literally just copy and paste the whole Bitcoin folder, because I was always worried about, like, not having something. And your wallet, the way it actually worked was that you would have this backup, but it was only good for 100 transactions. So it would generate, it would pre-generate 100 Bitcoin addresses for you to receive with, and you would just basically go through them. And depending on the wallet, it either would just show them all at once and you would just kind of go down the line, or they would just kind of give it to you, but in the background, it would generate 100. But after you used those up, you had to back up your wallet again, or you didn't have a backup of any new transactions. Like, it was only good for those 100 addresses. And as soon as you generated new ones, well, now you got to do a completely fresh backup. Seed phrases were a big deal. I mean, to turn it into 12 or 24 words is way, way simpler and easier to move offline. Like to save a file, it has to be on a computer. Like, it has to be basically exposed to something. I mean, yes, obviously you encrypt it and all that stuff, but it is not the same as a seed phrase, which you can write down on a piece of paper, you can memorize in your brain. Like, I can't memorize my wallet.dat file, right? And then, of course, like I was saying, HD wallets, though, is that you now have a path to derive all of these addresses. So as long as you have your seed phrase to regenerate your key, and then you know the path that you're using to create addresses, you back it up once. You back it up when you create the wallet. And how amazing for security is that, that you can then basically take the keys off of the computer and just receive and generate addresses indefinitely. You never have to back it up again. You can, it, like, that's the source of, like, true cold storage. Otherwise, you couldn't do that. You'd need to bring it back out to get some new addresses, or you'd have to have horrible, horrible privacy and just keep reusing the same address over and over and over and over again. And these were new developments, like QR codes. Trying to use this before QR codes was a real pain in the butt. Of course, there was nothing mobile anyway, so it's like you damn near couldn't use QR codes right when they first came out anyway, because there were no mobile Bitcoin wallets. But we really think of these as like permanent parts of Bitcoin, but they are not. These were huge improvements over the early protocol and client-side like interfaces and services. And now with, like, I'm starting to take the Lightning Network for granted. Like, it's starting to get to the point where it really, really frustrates me when it doesn't work, because I'm using it so much that I feel like, well, we should be done. We should be done. It should be this easy. Everybody should already have a standard. So I know the feeling, but I also know it's absurd. I'm just being ridiculously impatient because it's moving at a grueling pace. I mean, we're already getting into the seedless wallet phase. And that's where, like, you have things like Casa and Green Wallet and Hexa, like, who's our sponsor. Like I mentioned earlier, I said I was going to bring them back up, is the ability to, like, they've done the Shamir secret sharing, which I talked about in, like, yesterday's little ad spot. And they break the key up into a 3 of 5. So it's not like your coins are in multi-sig, but your key is broken up into 3 of 5. And then you, like, use your contacts and, like, your other devices as backup. So that you would just go, when you wanted to restore your wallet, you would just, do a request from your contacts that you saved it with, and then scan your other device, and it would rebuild the key from those. So it's, like, totally seedless. And this is becoming common, like, just unique backup systems to try to make it, you know, one step removed, because people lose pieces of paper. You know, even keeping a seed is sometimes a lot of responsibility for some people. And Casa does the same thing, is that it automatically breaks it up and puts it on, like, your iCloud, your basic iCloud stuff for your applications that you get, you know, for free. And then part of the key is stored with Casa and part on the device or something like that. I can't remember exactly the workup. But it basically encrypts it, breaks it into pieces, and stores it in these multiple different locations. So all you need is, like, your Apple ID and password and your Casa ID and password. And you can basically get back all of the pieces of it and restore your wallet on a new phone without really missing a beat. All the pieces are just there and waiting for you. Now, I will tell you, this would have seemed ridiculous 5 years ago. I mean, just ridiculous that we could get to this point where some of the things were that simple and the user interfaces are becoming intuitive. Like, I still have problems. Like, my banking, the app for my bank, for PNC Bank, is really a pain in the butt sometimes. Sometimes the user interface just kind of sucks. And there's plenty of things that I hate about how it works and or doesn't work. Like, Bitcoin is... there are always things that you have to learn, but Bitcoin is way easier. And I'm biased. Like, I'm super comfortable with all of it. So, like, it makes sense that it's super easy and intuitive to me. But, you know, to some degree, like Gigi talks about it in this piece, is that you can't abstract away everything. You can't hide everything, because some of those things are critical to how Bitcoin functions. We're always going to have Bitcoin addresses because that's how Bitcoin talks. It might be that we won't have to really see them much, but that doesn't take away the fact that they're not going anywhere. And personally, that trade-off makes me a little bit nervous. I want to be able to see the address that I'm sending to. But just the leaps that have been made this year in 2019, like, Lightning went from practically non-existent and unusable to, like, I say this all the time, and this is not an exaggeration, I literally use it every single day in the real world. Like, I've spent $1,200 on Fold this month, since the beginning of September. And the combination of Strike, Breeze, the Breeze wallet on Lightning, Phoenix on Lightning, Multi-sig tools, like, again, Casa and Green Wallet, and Hexa has the savings wallet in their thing. That's a very similar multi-sig to how Green Wallet does it. And then Caravan, the open source tool that Unchained does. And kind of the easy setup I had when I just created my Unchained vault, which you don't have to do. Caravan is separate, so you can do Caravan. I did Unchained, actually, the KYC version, so that I could potentially use their financial services in the future. But a Caravan itself is just a simple multi-sig tool. And then Lily Wallet. Lily Wallet is one that I've been playing around with. It is also another really simple UX. I mean, it has a picture of your hardware wallet, and you just click on each of them, and it gives you, like, point, 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 like, what you're supposed to do. You plug it in, you sign. Then you click on the other one, you plug it in, you sign. You click on the other one, you plug it in and sign. And boom, you've signed a transaction. And the interface is stupid simple. This is all brand new. This, I mean, the age of all of these things is best measured in months. I just finally got on the BTC Pay server boat, like, God, I don't know, 10 months, maybe a full year ago now. I don't think so. I don't know, but Lunanode has, like, the one-click setup. Like, I was screwing around and trying to set one up in the past on just, you know, by command line interface. And, like, I got it up on one thing, and I also set up a Lightning node by CLI. Like, I'd played around with a lot of this stuff, but it was really a headache. And then, like, as soon as I wanted to kind of move it because, you know, I wanted to change my operating system or something, like it wasn't persistent. It felt like a thing that I knew I was going to have to trash and do again later. And control was not, I mean, CLI is a pain in the butt most of the time. Like, I like it because I'm kind of nerdy and I get to feel special because I get to play with these tools before a lot of people can, but it wasn't persistent until I got the Lunanode one click, just, you know, click, hit a couple settings, and boom, I've got my own server, and it's just giving me a URL to log into. And then, hell, look what's happening in the next generation of hardware wallets. Like, I thought, like, hardware wallets were a huge deal. A huge deal. I mean, it seemed like next-level security stuff is like, holy crap, the idea of a device that you, like, can't get into, and you can buy it specifically for your keys. That's where I started thinking that, oh, man, there might be a day where, you know, you buy your own, like, modem or router, like when we finally got to the point in the internet where we were buying our own modem and router and actually having this device in our house, is that, like, oh, crap, you could have your own Bitcoin keys. Like, you could go, like, next level, like, hardware keys that large corporations and stuff have. Now it makes sense for individuals to have that level of control and security. And the next generation of these look amazing. Like, the Trezor Model T is now actually pretty old, but, you know, it's got a larger color screen, and I still am a big fan of kind of the old and trusted with Trezor and Ledger, and I love kind of the cold card because of the cyberpunk feel to it. Like, it's the simpler it is, the more I feel like I can rely on it. I am loving Kobo Vault. Like, the fact that it's got a camera, it feels like a little smartphone, and it's a much simpler process, and it's air-gapped. One of the things that actually makes it more easier to use is also an explicit security feature that you never have to worry about plugging it in. Like, you know what, you can only communicate with it via QR. So, it produces QR codes on the screen, and then I scan with my Blue Wallet, another Lightning wallet. This made it dirt simple. Custodial, you know, you're just like Wallet of Satoshi. Those make it unbelievably easy. Strike too, you know, I'm using dollars to send Bitcoin and Lightning, but these are service level things. The services and the client and application level is where you solve the user experience problems, and you can only go so far. But we've just made huge leaps, and then there's the foundations. A passport device, which I have not gotten to play with, but it looks really cool. Very similar idea to the Kobo Vault. I think this is going to be kind of become a norm that we probably either have touch screens potentially down the road, be a a major part of the hardware wallets. Foundation's Passport is not touchscreen, but it is a phone-like device. And the key with both of these is that they communicate with a screen and a camera. So it shows the QR code to send transaction details to your phone. Your phone, or vice versa, excuse me, you like write the transaction details on your phone in a quote-unquote watch-only wallet, and then it shows a QR code. You scan it with your hardware wallet, like Kobo Vault, and then sign it, and then turn back around and scan it the other way. Scan it with your mobile, the signed transaction, and then broadcast. And that is the communication. It is a lot simpler than bringing up a website or a, you know, making sure you got to download the right wallet. I'm always a little bit nervous that I have to go to a website for Trezor or Ledger or download a entirely new or different client somewhere. And understandably, a lot of people might be made nervous. You know, that's a lot of extra steps. And there are solutions to these, but there aren't standards yet. That is really where our big UX problems come from. But there is no shortcut to making standards. Understand, standards aren't built. We can build what might be the new standard 1,000 times a day, every day, for years. But that's not what a standard is. What makes a standard unique, that is a social and networking problem. This is a network layer issue. The only way that a standard emerges is to have competing tools for all of these things. Everybody wants to build or solve it in their own way. And everybody can't solve all user experience problems at once. And some of these things are either not compatible or completely different paths. Standards emerge in a marketplace through the spread of information and communication between separate tools, separate users, and the ones that the market wants to focus on. Like how many people, you know, if there's one feature or one very simple thing about this tool that makes 100,000 people download it, where something maybe subjectively a lot of people think is critically more important, but for some reason it doesn't solve the right problem or it doesn't hit and only 1,000 people download it, well, then the one with 100,000 downloads is more likely to become the standard. But I just think the only way of sorting through that, of figuring out what those standards for UX and finding the solutions to UX, I mean, you know, a lot of people don't know about Umbral or Lily Wallet or these new hardware devices and stuff. So, like, it's about spreading, testing, and playing. Like, you share these things out and then allow the teams and stuff to iterate on them. Like, there's no shortcut to that. It's both a lot of work and a factor of time. This is why, A, I love doing it, but I also encourage other people to download these things, test them out, play with them, send a little bit to it, you know, use this Lightning wallet, sign up with this service, because it's an important part of figuring out which ones work. It's a really important part of figuring out which ones are really smooth and feel like Strike is totally seamless. After you sign up for it, even the sign-up process isn't even that bad. But using it, like depositing and sending transactions, takes no time at all. And it works consistently with the tools and services that I am trying to use it with. So I tell people about it. I'm like, go try it. Go download it. Play with it. Use Fold. Use Umbral. Use Caravan. Use Casa and Green Wallet and Hexa Wallet and all the Lightning wallets. That's how we get to the next stage of this thing. Being a programmer or developer is not the only way to contribute. Just using and playing with the software and seeing where it works great and where it sucks or where it needs improvement is a huge part of the process. It's also the most fun, so you should probably do it if you haven't done it. If you haven't downloaded like a wallet or a thing in a while, be safe about it. You know, there's always the possibility of malware and all that crap, but, you know, don't send your life savings to a toy you just bought, but do go play. So in the end, I'm kind of with Gigi on this, is that there is a lot to improve on the user experience. There is a ton to build. But I don't really think Bitcoin is like behind on this. There are a ton of technical problems to solve here, and we need to keep focused on those technical problems. The service level and the client levels need to deal with that stuff, and there's a lot that can be abstracted away, but Bitcoin core devs should not be worried about user experience from the sort of customer side. They should be thinking about this like infrastructure. They're OS designers, and you know, like this is building Unix. Apple will make iOS and Mac OS and the computers and the devices. Like, let them do that. The Bitcoin core devs do not need to be worried about that. They need to be focused on the security, the cryptography, the most important and secure improvements that can come safely to the protocol, and that have massive potential going forward, you know, that aren't just like a 2-year change, but something that fundamentally can open up an entire new ecosystem and an entirely new set of user experience tools, of being able to abstract away on the higher layers, and let the wallet developers and the services and the Jack Mallers and those people in the world, let them figure out the user experience. Because if we don't have strong, reliable tools, then trying to abstract all of this stuff away isn't going to give us, we're going to lose the very thing that that is the purpose of having it in the first place. Like Gigi said, there are some things that can't be abstracted away, and if we do, we lose what makes Bitcoin important. So that's probably all I want to say about that, but just thought this was a really good article. Like I said, there's some really fun images in this, just kind of showing, stepping through a little bit of the history of the internet and just showing how far we've come. And I think we've made leaps in Bitcoin. Working with Bitcoin in 2012, it just night and day. It doesn't look anything like it. And I have so many apps. I have a ton of wallets. I'm mostly Lightning now, but it's almost hard to tell that I'm even using the same thing. And some of those fundamental technical tools like Schnorr and Taproot, being, you know, key examples that are like right around the corner, those are going to enable additional, like really simple things like Hexawallet does with the batching that I talk about. Is that you can just kind of select contacts. Like that sort of simplicity in adding signatures together that you get with something like Schnorr is going to make things like that even easier to implement and even more reliable and kind of have less of a what if something goes wrong sort of implementation. So I hope you guys enjoyed this article and a little bit of Guy's take on kind of where Bitcoin has come from and where we are now. And if there's something you want to test out and like a wallet you want to play with, I'll recommend again our sponsor, Hexawallet. It's the most recent for me that I've been downloading and playing with it. And it seems like a really cool one. I'll throw out the offer one more time that if you are adding contacts to your wallet and you want to add me, shoot me a message on like Twitter or something. But much love for those guys for supporting the show. That's Hexa, H-E-X-A, at hexawallet.io or any of the app stores. Another one actually that I'm really excited to jump into that I have not done yet is Umbral. And that's about running your own node, and it's like really modular, and I'm really intrigued about this one. So I'm going to get together a lot of links in today's episode, like in the show notes, so that you can check out all of these wallets and or like, you know, hardware wallets and stuff if you want to kind of really dig in and, you know, take my offer up and go play and download some new stuff and get some new Bitcoin toys. Because there is still a lot to build. There is still a lot to play with. And there is new stuff coming out all the time. That is our job, to explore it, to talk about it, to share it, and to learn how to interact with and use these tools properly, because in the not too distant future, I think we're going to have to show the whole world how to do this. The Bitcoin future is coming. Let's make sure we're ready. Thank you guys so much for listening to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, and until next time, take it easy, guys. This has been a 111 production, and you are listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Crypto Economy Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.